Hey guys, and welcome back to the Building Financial Fitness podcast. And today we have with us Josh. Welcome, Josh.
Hi, thanks, Eunice.
So today we actually wanted to talk about upskilling in 2024 and how should we think differently about it. But before we go into it, I also wanted for you to tell us your background, because you started off from marketing management, then you transitioned to coding, and right now you're kind of dipping your feet into quantitative finance. So like, tell us a little bit about your experience.
Yeah, sure. So I think I will just start when I started the marketing management studies in Denmark. Then I actually went into kind of the coding sphere on the side, because I had a friend in the uni who actually had an app idea. And he was like, okay, he has someone who wants to code it, but he doesn't want to do it alone. And he asked me, do you want to learn it? And I was like, sure, I know nothing about coding, but I always wanted to learn it. Why not, right?
And which year was this?
It was in 2020, I think.
Okay.
So over the next 6 months, kind of web app development with a mentor, he basically said to me, here's some YouTube videos, watch them, make a website, make this, make that, and gave me feedback on that. And I was amazed by how much I learned in 6 months compared to let's say the marketing management degree, which I already read a lot about books. I was at a business economics high school, so I already got some information in there as well. And I compared kind of the pay, so to say, the salary, and I was okay, that's really interesting, because in 6 months I actually could earn more than in the 2 years that I studied, so to say. And it was really practical. Right? Then what was super interesting for me as well there was I actually applied for a student working position in coding.
Yeah.
And I had nothing on my CV, right? Except saying hey, I did 6 months web app development with YouTube. And they considered me. They were hey, here's this exercise. If you do it, we will step forward.
So do you feel it was just based off that 6 months experience, or they were kind of interlacing that with your marketing background?
I'm not 100% sure, because it was a pure web app development position, so to say. It could be due to the marketing management degree, that I had a certain kind of, how to say, proof of I have a certain educational background or whatsoever, but I'm not 100% sure. And I think that's also the interesting thing, when I transitioned, so I did kind of a pre-bachelor, so to say. So it was 2 years. You have in Denmark, this kind of system there. You do 2 years with the academy, and then you can top it up with 1.5 years in different fields. And I always wanted to go into innovation entrepreneurship. But I thought, okay, I need to have the skills, right? Because, I mean, I cannot just found an app or whatever if I cannot code myself, right? I need to spend a lot of money and all these kind of things, which I don't have. So rather learn it myself. Then I actually went to this coding school, it's called 42. There's actually here one in Singapore as well that recently opened up. And that really struck me, because the only requirements how you can get accepted there is you need to be 18 and you need to pass their tests, so to say. So for me, I was okay, just give it a try, right? You learn 1 month already, that's kind of how long they call it, piscine, so a kind of swimming pool in French, where they throw you into the cold water. You learn with your other peers, who are also not really more experienced than you. And after this month, you will actually be accepted or you won't. And then that's where the real journey starts, so to say, where you're diving deeper into it and so on. And that's what I did over the last 2 years. And what I figured out is okay, I actually wanted to have someone who can teach me in a way. I mean, I had other people who I learned a lot from, but I was always this kind of thing of is this really the right thing, so to say? Or are they kind of not bullshitting me, but is it more they also don't know 100%? So that's why I'm maybe learning it in the wrong way, so to say.
Like this peer-to-peer learning system.
Yeah.
You were wondering if it was the wrong way.
I wouldn't say if it's the wrong way. I think if I compare those three ways of how I learned, the marketing management degree was more okay, I had a teacher who gave us the input, who was trained in that, and then he let us do.
Yep.
And if we had some questions in the group, we had this opportunity to actually say, hey, we're having a challenge about this one, we're unclear, can you help us? And then he will come in and be like, hey, yeah, this and this and this, right? Then with the mentor, it was okay, he was kind of the one who knows everything, which later on turned out also he didn't know everything.
Everybody does, right?
Of course,
sure. Varying degrees.
Absolutely. But from the way of how he did it his way, how he knew it, right? And that's one of the things. I mean, I would say I learned definitely a lot, but still, if I would have had maybe someone who would have known more or whatsoever, right? Then I would have maybe progressed faster or whatever, right? You never know. And it's fine. Now going to this coding school, I had, of course, other friends and other peers who were like maybe, you know, more experienced in coding to ask. But at the same time, there was always this like, okay, like sometimes I asked certain people and I was like, it doesn't feel like they're confident in what they're saying or what they're doing. And for me, it doesn't really make sense, because when I'm thinking about it myself, I'm like, wait a minute, like, does this really make sense? Like, So there's this kind of it to it as well. But I think still you learn a lot from like how other people perceive a project or also like a way, because I like to compare it with math. Like if I'm asking you, hey, the solution should be 25, what is the way there? There are so many ways.
Multiple ways to get
exactly
to it. Like, yeah.
So, and I think that's the interesting thing, because there's no this right or wrong in a way, which I really enjoyed at the school, because it was not like you had a teacher, so to say, who was like in front of you and saying like, this is the right way. No, it was like, this is the solution, find your way. And if you have questions, ask the other people how to solve it with your way, right?
Yep.
Of course, you can ask the internet, you can ask nowadays like ChatGPT. I'm not sure if like they actually banned it from like the school, because they were like, okay, like literally can write like a
they
lot
can
of
write
your code
for you. Yes,
I actually tried it with the last example. Like we had to create like a real life app where we had like the Pong Play, for example, to implement, and like a chat and these kind of things. And I was doing the front end, and I was like, okay, there's this new framework. And I was like, okay, so I tried it out, and then it didn't work. And I was like, wait, what? Okay, maybe I made a mistake. You know, I'm human. So I literally copy-pasted it and put it there, and it was not working. And I was like, how the hell like can this be that in the official documentation, there's like an error? But I think because it's so fast-paced, like that a lot of things change and change and change all the time, that it was just outdated. So then I was like, okay, let's give ChatGPT a try, right? Typed it in, was like, hey, write me like this button in Svelte. I got
done.
It. I put it in. It worked. I was like, wow.
Because it gave you the updated.
Exactly. But the thing is, now what I'm thinking is like ChatGPT isn't updated until like the newest version, so to say. So it's mainly, let's say, trained on past data, right? So let's say like GitHub, for example, right? Yep. So you train it on the whole GitHub code of everyone that is public. So out of that syntax, you can think of like coding as more of like a logical language, I would say, which is like, okay, if you know Python, it's easier for you to learn C. If it's like, you know, C, okay, it's C++, C sharp, whatever, right? It's like, it's all similar to a certain extent. Of course, you have like different things in different languages that are only there, but yeah. So I was thinking, okay, either it just took from other Svelte writers this kind of information and gave it to me, or it actually came up by like using other codes and was thinking, okay, the syntax of Svelte is like this and like this and like this, so probably potentially it's like this. I think that's very interesting. But at the same time, like coming into like the quantitative training part, I was also like, of course, like, okay, if ChatGPT, you know, like does my whole job, then why did I learn coding, right? I mean, I learned actually coding because I thought like marketing will be automated at one point by, you know, just algorithms and so on, that you don't need it anymore. But then this struck me where I was like, okay, let's try it with quantitative finance. So I was like, okay, write me like a training strategy about this and this and this. Okay, it gave me a training strategy.
It's based on certain rules that you put out.
Kind of, yeah. But the thing is, I would say like I wouldn't trust it because it's still like in this kind of place where it's saying like, okay, I take like the whole internet, like everything is a remix, and I just remix it up and put it out there, but then still does it work? And also like to the more nitty-gritty detail. I mean, when you think of like ChatGPT, just was like 1 year now into this kind of field. So we will see in the next 10 to 20 years where we will be. So I think there's definitely improvement, like the iteration is happening and so on. And when I went into like the quantitative finance myself, it was like I found a mentor and I talked with him and he said like what he's doing, and I really connected with him like personally very well. So I was like, okay, let's just try this out, right? For like 6 months, what can I lose, right? So we set it up that, because I didn't know anything, right, in quantitative finance, but I had this coding experience and marketing experience as well. So we set up, okay, what if we do it like he teaches me, and everything that he teaches me, I'm creating like content out of that that I'm actually providing to people to, you know, make it more accessible and all these kind of things. So that's what we went on, and we published it on like the YouTube channel. And I would say, like, from the comments that I'm reading and from like the likes and from the views and so on, it's definitely valuable content to other people as well. That's like the interesting thing, that we're always teacher and student at the same time. And for me, with like this quantitative finance experience, I mean, my business partner, he has like 20 years of experience in that. Mm. So I'm like now, let's say 6-7 months, maybe like this. So like, mm-hmm. I cannot just download like 20 years of experience like that, right?
Yep.
But when I'm talking with people about it, I'm actually thinking like, oh, interesting. I know actually quite a lot.
Mm.
But for me, I feel I'm always having like this kind of imposter syndrome where I'm like, okay, I know it here in my head, but I don't really know it, like, you know, on paper. Like, it's not like a book that I've written or something where I'm like saying, oh, I know this and this and this, right? So it's kind of intangible.
Mm.
And I think that's like one of the huge challenges.
But you see, right? You talked about your journey. You sort of like said about all these like different phases in your life with a certain amount of curiosity, right? If you're interested in it, then you go deep into it and you learn about it. And then what you mentioned just now, I thought was like an interesting insight, where the 6 months that you spend with the coding experience actually yielded a higher salary than your 2 years marketing management degree. I was just thinking, how are people starting to change their thinking in terms of how they pursue their education, their quote-unquote education? Because right now, you know, we could be doing like 6 months in like various things very deep, and we could actually have a more viable career as opposed to, you know, going to university and doing a 2-year degree.
Definitely. I mean, I think the thing is, how to say, like, I have a friend who wrote like his, I think, master's thesis about Peter Drucker.
Mm.
And he already said in, I don't know, like 1970, whatever, like the universities will become obsolete to a certain extent, because everything is like what we're doing right now, kind of, right? Peer-to-peer learning,
yep,
in a way. And I think it's very interesting when you look at it, for example, from MIT, right? Like with CS50 courses or something like that.
Mm.
They put it online and everyone can watch it. I mean, yep. We in the coding school, we watched it, right?
Mm.
Because we were like, hey, we have this one problem. Like, what is a good resource to actually learn from it? Oh, yeah, there's the CS50 course from MIT. Cool, let's do it, right?
Mm.
That's also one of the interesting things, I think, with AI, where it will lead. It's like the individualized learning path. So when I'm thinking of, for example, my journey, it wasn't straight. Like, definitely not. Like,
yep.
But at the same time, I learned at every step something. Now, other people, they went maybe a more linear journey. That doesn't mean like they're like worse or bad or off. It just means like, okay, they have a different path for their skills, for their level where they're currently at. Like my friend, right, for example, like who had his own coding language, he started coding with 10.
Mm.
Now think of that, right? I mean, I started with 21 kind of. So like he's already a senior by the time that I started.
Yeah.
I think that's like the interesting thing, where like university is kind of this kind of like, for me, realm where you can learn a lot of different things. Let's say computer science, right? You learn a lot about like the history, and you learn about this and you learn about that and so on. And they have like a certain curriculum and that's how it works. And I think for me personally, I'm like more a theoretical, practical learner. So if I'm like learning about the history of computers, I'm like, yeah, that's nice. But I'm thinking for myself, I'm like, okay, if I go to a job, I wonder if my boss will ask me, yeah, do you know when the computer was invented? And I would be like, yeah, I know the answer. Like, you know, it was this and this year.
Mm.
And then I'm like, yeah, and what do I get now? A pay raise? Like, no, definitely not, right?
So that's good for trivia night.
Exactly. Right? For sure.
Mm.
And I think that's like the interesting thing. Also, if you're interested, right? I'm not saying like that this is not like important knowledge or whatever, right? Because I think it's like, you know, you need to understand like the past to know actually what the future is about.
Mm.
I mean, my friend who started coding with 10, like he has like a book that's like super thick about like the whole history of computers. Now, I think he learned way more through like just reading through this because he was interested in it than like going to university, because university goes to a certain depth of it.
Yeah.
I think you can think of it like with, let's say, cars, right? You don't need to know how a car works to actually drive it. Now, the thing is, I think the same with like code or computers, you don't need to understand how the bits and bytes are actually operating in your computer, right? Like in your smartphone, for example, to actually use it.
Mm.
And I think that's like the thing, that you can go into every nitty-gritty detail, but only if you're interested.
Yeah.
Now, I think with like the individualized learning, for example, where you say, okay, some people are faster, some people need more time, whatsoever, just do it in incremental steps. I mean, I'm learning like Chinese right now, for example, with Duolingo, right? Mm-hmm. It's my pace. Mm. Like I give the pace.
Yep.
Like I'm like, okay, I have never used anything of it. Now today I have 10 minutes. Now I have 50 minutes. Now I have half an hour, like on the way here, like I learned it. On the way back, I can learn it. You know, so that's like the thing. And then it's like due to the mistakes that I make, it actually gives me those back and says, hey, you made a mistake here. Have a look at this and this and this. And I think this is where I see definitely like a huge increase like with AI soon. And that's also what I'm trying like with the quantitative finance to kind of like build in a way.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think it's about, for me, like a knowledge base kind of.
Yep.
But at the same time, it always depends on like the quality of the data.
Yes. It's as good as the data set basically because pulling off that.
Exactly.
Mm.
And a good example for that is, for example, DeepL. It's like a translator, you probably heard of it. They used, like, I think from the European Parliament or whatever, like, all the transcripts in all the different languages. That's why they are so good. Because it's, like, a very high level of explanation and there's, like, real translators who are actually translating it and all these kind of things. And I think that's, like, for me, the symbiosis of, how to say, AI and people, because AI is not... how to say, it's only that smart as we make it, so to say.
Mm.
And when we're talking about skills, it's like, I feel that skills should be something that are like looking out into the future. So I think there's like these studies where it says like, okay, what are like the most important skills for, I don't know, the next 10 years or whatsoever. And I personally believe like critical thinking is one of them. Because these days, I just recently listened to a podcast as well where someone said, Microsoft presented like their new model and said like, yeah, and here you can, you know, type in like all the, for example, from NVIDIA or whatever, like the financial statement of it and get like all the numbers. They were wrong.
Hmm.
And no one realized it. And everyone could have just, you know, like NVIDIA financial statement of whatever 2023
and taken it as
and
accurate.
Just checked it.
Hmm.
And that's, I think, like one of the interesting things where I personally believe like there are AI tools out there as well where you actually get the resources of it.
Mm-hmm.
So you get like the source of like, this is where I actually got it.
Mm-hmm.
And I recently tried one of it with like the, for example, China getting like a new visa out. And I knew already like, okay, there's this new visa out. It's pretty recent and just asked like this AI tool, right? Like, which is connected to the internet. Like, hey, is this something? And then was like, didn't knew about it or it wasn't, didn't learn it yet or whatsoever. And by just seeing like, okay, where did it actually got the information, I could actually figure out, okay, it's not that accurate because it still uses old information, which is fine. But I think we're living in a so fast-paced environment that I always pose this question of like, how can we keep information always up to date?
Yeah.
Because as well with like information right now, it's like there's so much input on a daily basis, on a minutely basis that is created. And I believe we would have to have some sort of quality assurance. It's kind of like, does it work or does it not?
Yep.
Or with coding, it's like, okay, create this app. Does it work? Yes. Okay, cool. When it doesn't work, okay, like there's a mistake, right? It's like you cannot blame it on anyone else. It's like okay, I made probably a mistake.
Yeah, I think there's a few things there, you know, when we think about upskilling in 2024, because there's a lot of shifts in terms of, you know, what work looks like, the kinds of tools that we have access to. And the first thing that we talked about today was sort of like skills, right? Skills-based. Because like even we look at HR hiring, they're kind of moving towards skills-based recruitment as opposed to looking at the, you know, which school you came from or the degree that you got, because, you know, skills-based and sort of like doing the work is way more critical than the pedigree or the university that you came from. I think there's definitely that shift. The second point is you said that critical thinking is very important, especially right now where there could be a lot of like hallucination by AI, just being able to sense check the output of what AI gives us and seeing, you know, does this make sense? Is it accurate? Or kind of just taking it at face value. So I think the critical thinking and being able to question things when they don't make sense is very critical. And I actually think that the third one, which I think you alluded to, which is in terms of the soft skills. So you mentioned that the peer-to-peer learning, right? And a lot of that it is in terms of collaboration and brainstorming with the team, with peers that may are at the same level of you. Everybody comes from different backgrounds and sort of trying to problem solve together. Actually, that soft skill of being able to collaborate with the team to solve a problem, I think is extremely important. And there is also that shift, because there's that shift maybe even away from hard skills towards soft skills, like the more like EQ side of things.
Definitely. I think it's really interesting because I recently saw like from Simon Sinek, for example, his one about like trust and performance.
Mm.
And he said, no one wants to have like the low trust and low performance guy.
Mm-hmm.
but also no one wants to have like the low trust and high performance.
Yes.
They would rather have someone who is like, you know, like
middle
medium
performance
trust or yeah, exactly.
And maybe high trust.
Exactly. Yeah. Because that's like someone you can rely on. And I think especially in like the world, everything is based on like collaboration, right? It's like we don't build a house by ourselves. We need like architects. We need like people who get the material. We need like everything, right? And so it's like this kind of, okay, can I rely on the other person as well, right? And I definitely agree with you. And I'm not sure like here in Singapore how it works or whatsoever. But I think this collaborative kind of thing is, let's say, for example, quantitative finance. I mean, I tried to hear like for the last 2 months kind of to get into that field, so to say, to speak with people in that field and so on. And what I got from like other people was that it's kind of like a Chinese wall around them because no one knows what they're doing. Like no one knows how it really works to a certain extent, unless you're kind of in that industry to a certain extent. And that was something where I'm like, okay, that's really interesting. But because I believe personally in like this open source kind of like thing of like, okay, we collaborate, we share stuff together and so on to actually improve things, right? And I think still in like university, as I have seen it, it's like, or also what I got reflected from other people who are in university right now, they say like, yeah, it's mainly like egoistic, like everyone is for themselves and being like, okay, like some people are hiding like the books in like the library to not like, you know, that other people don't get it or whatever. And I'm like, are you serious? Like, I mean, sorry, but like, you know, you could have just like a digital copy and then everyone has it, right? So like everyone gets the same chances, so to say.
Yeah. But I think we covered those 3 points today, right? And we sort of like look back into it in terms of the importance of recognizing that shift towards skills base as well as just chasing degrees. Anybody who's entering a job market, you know, if you're looking to go for a certain job, you know, just understand the skills that's needed and also like, you know, do projects or things that's around that, centered around that. The importance of critical thinking, especially in the current world where a lot of people are playing around with ChatGPT and maybe sometimes just taking inputs on face value. I think it's important to also be able to sense check, you know, what makes sense and what doesn't as much as possible. And the third is, you know, in terms of building that soft skills and like, let's say like establishing trust, what you said about what Simon Sinek is about high trust and high performance, or like where do you want to position yourself on this skill? I think that's important as well. So I think, yeah, we covered some good ground today. For listeners who want to find out about you or want to chat with you on your experience, like where can they find you?
I think they can just like connect with me on LinkedIn at Josh Lenoch. So Lenoch.
We'll put it in the show notes. Thank you so much, Josh, for being on.
Thank you so much for having
me. Many thanks as well to all of you out there for tuning in. This has been a fantastic conversation and we would definitely love to hear what you think about it. If you would like to get in touch with us, you can reach out to us through the email podcasts@melisten.sg or at my Instagram at misfitfi. Aside from that, if you enjoy what you're listening to and want to hear more, please help to spread and grow the show by subscribing on MeListen or Apple Podcasts, or by following on Spotify or wherever you listen to your podcasts. Finally, the Building Financial Fitness podcast is an original production from MediaCorp and recorded at Scape Live Studios, The Pod, powered by Audio Technica and City Music. Episode production is done by Junas Yu, with editing and support by Danny Cordy and Gareth Fernandez. Once again, I'm your host and BFF, Junas Yu. Until the next time.